Well, good morning. We're still in the morning, right? I can't tell anymore. I'll be honest with you, I didn't realize there was going to be a time change. Not that there's a huge time change. It's an hour difference. But that hour will make a difference because it's actually later there. So I'm waking up way too early here, naturally. So now I'll be honest with you, love the adults that are in here. Love the teens. I much prefer working with teens. And here's the reason. When I get on to teens, you guys tend to listen. When I get on to adults, they just look at me weird. Some of y'all are like, that happens in my house too. Okay, don't do that with your parents, by the way. But in general, it's my pleasure to be here. I love being able to come and teach. I missed out last night some because I got caught up. I had to write a couple articles, and I hate doing that. But somebody asked me to write articles, so I did that. And I totally missed out. And somebody asked me this morning, well, are you done with the articles? Are you able to just be here? And I said, oh, yeah, this is what I love. I love to be able to interact and talk with people. And that's what I'm going to share with you guys right now is I hope and I want to hear from you during this. This is a class. I like to teach this from a class setting. So I hope you guys don't mind me interacting a little bit with you. We are going to be in Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11 is where we're going to be today. And I'll say this also, I don't know what rules you guys have here in your youth group and the rest. I bring you the greetings from the Faith Village Church of Christ, the youth ministry there. On average, we probably average about 45 to 70 teens or so on any given Sunday. Typically nowadays, especially after we had a big graduating class, we're probably closer to 40, 45 right now this next year. And I miss them already. I get to see them, believe it or not, almost every day in some way or another. Out of the 365 days that we have in the calendar, we have about 210 days worth of events every year. Now, some of you are looking at that and going, that sounds amazing. Some of your parents are like, that sounds amazing because that means your teens are not at home. But for me, in fact, it's not actually just events. In fact, we don't do, believe it or not, fun events. In fact, I don't know. I've never once had to teach a teenager or a kid how to have fun ever. They're usually teaching me. You guys are usually the ones going, we know what's fun. So what I tell them is all plan spiritual things, you bring the fun. We'll make these things fun. So we do a Monday night Bible study. We do a Tuesday night singing. We have Thursday nights. We have a new Bible study that's about to start that's called Skeptics Welcome. In fact, we're inviting questions from the community and from other teens who want to, and we'll do our best to answer those. We're actually going to live stream those using social media. I'm also a little bit different in that I don't actually see social media as evil. I see social media as a tool. I shared yesterday, social media and technology is like money. It's about how you use it. Okay. Are there a lot of people out there? How many of you are on Twitter? Anybody? Okay, so you know the evils of the world. They're everywhere. Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Snapchat, all of those. You know the evils that can be out there. But that doesn't mean that necessarily that you will. Now, I know that helps out a lot with teenagers where I work at because they all feel like, hey, when my parent says I'm not allowed to have it, they all come to me and go, see, Brandon says it's okay. And I said, no. Brandon says you can be taught how to use it correctly. That's the difference than saying it's okay. Mom and dad always win. Every argument when it comes to that. Totally back the parents. But I will not go so far as to say, by the way, technology is just a fad. It's going to go away. That's not reality. In fact, it's the world we live in now. And I'd much rather spend our time and energy teaching people how to use it correctly. Because I've seen the value in that. I have probably close to 5,000 followers on Facebook, friends, if you want to call that. I have a hard time calling that friends. Anybody? Because I don't know 3,000 of them, like personally. I didn't know half of you guys before I got here. It's just like somebody sent me a friend request. Cool. I don't really know. I think I have like 300 friends from India that I've never met. That are Indian preachers and African preachers from Nigeria and Ghana and all these different places. And I've managed to see how often I hear from them going, hey, we use your sermons. We downloaded your app and we use the sermons to teach in our village. And I'm going, not sure that was my intention on that class, but apparently that works. And so in doing all these things, and I want to share this, that faith oftentimes takes forms that we don't understand. That it actually grows in ways that we can't comprehend. We did an event a few years ago called 12 Questions Dallas. This is a big event. Basically, it's a reverse gospel meeting. Anybody here ever been to a gospel meeting? Okay? A few of you guys. All right, some of you younger guys, gospel meeting, when you hear those words, what do you think? Now, be honest. This is a safe place. What's your first thought?
Boring.
Okay? So, you guys speaking for you, is this true? Is this true? Okay? How about, and I'll be honest, this is me growing up. Okay, I'm just going to say this. When I first used to hear gospel meetings, I was like, oh, great, another time where I get to go and hear the same thing I hear on Sundays. Like, that was just my, but it'll be a person I've never heard of before. Like a speaker that comes in, right? So we decided to do something a little bit different. We reversed it. So we instead gave out 10,000 cards, business cards that simply had a question on them. And it said, if you could ask God any one question, what would it be? And we handed them to our members and we said, go give these to your friends. And we built out a website and they could go and they could put their questions in. And I was sitting back in my office going, man, I hope this works. We received over 3,000 questions that came in over a 2-month period. And it wasn't just small, silly questions like, did Adam and Eve have belly buttons? We got that one. Some of you are like, whoa, wait, did they? I saw you. I was like, what? Yeah, it totally throws you, doesn't it? But it was way deeper questions like, why did my son die when he was 26? It was questions like, why do children get cancer? Deep, life-altering, life-stirring, soul-crushing type of questions. And I'll be honest with you, I sat there and I went, I think we may have hit on something here. And so then we said, you don't have to come here. You don't have to come to our building. Stay where you are. We'll live stream it for you. You can watch it at home. This is about us coming to you. We're going to come to you. We're going to share the answers to the questions you've asked. So we picked the top 12 genres of questions. So we took a lot of those, kind of put them together. Why is there pain and suffering? Can anybody take a guess what the number one question was outside of pain and suffering? Can I be gay and a Christian? And I'll be honest with you, I got probably about 400 of those, but they were honest. It wasn't an agenda driven. Instead it was, I'm struggling with something. Can I still be a Christian? That was the premise of the entire question. And so we decided to live stream it, to put it out there. We averaged, believe it or not, 700 people watching online a night. Not only that, but since then, so this is about, that was in 2013. Since then, so 4 years now, we've had over 1 million views worldwide. We've had over 300 baptisms in India. Again, those guys from Facebook. I had 300 pastors, apparently, and this is just what I've heard offhand, pastors from a Baptist convention that took one of the videos, and the question was, is there one true church? Took that, watched it, and then went, yes, there is. And there was apparently a mass conversion where they were all baptized. And then they went back to their home churches, and apparently they're so far in the jungles, everybody's like, they come out every like 5 years to get together. So in about a year, we'll find out how things are going. That's what I know. Now, was that the plan or the goal for 12 Questions Dallas? Was it for things in India? No, I had no clue. Instead, it was just maybe if we put a plan out there so big that the only way it could ever succeed is if God is part of it. Maybe, and in fact, I'll be honest with you, and I think y'all know this enough, especially in leadership and in the church. Oftentimes, we don't dream big enough. We only do the things that we know will succeed at. Instead of, and by the way, that's not faith. That's assurance. And that's totally different. So when you guys think about faith, and let me just ask this real quick. What is faith? Now, if you want to cheat, you can do this. Just look at the first verse of Hebrews 11. Okay? If you want to cheat. But otherwise, what is faith? Okay? Absolutely. Is believing part of faith? 100%. But I want to give you, what is that?
Believing probably.
Believing what we don't see. In fact, if you want to look at Hebrews 11:1, it says what? Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the convictions of things not seen. Now, here's a little word I want you to notice. Did you notice now, faith is the assurance of things what? Hope for. What is hope? Some of you are like,
I get your paycheck at the end of 2 weeks.
Yes, you hope for it. You know it. You hope it's coming too, don't you? Anybody here still get paid by checks? Okay. Can I say this? Love our church family. I know they might see this. It's 2017, but we still get paid by church checks. Like online, like there's so many things online. It's the only thing I ever have to deal with an actual check. Ever. And it's 2017, and it's just sometimes, and I'll be honest, I think the main reason is because we have an awesome lady who works in the office who does all the finances, who is unbelievable with the finances. And so part of her job is that, and it's historically been that, but she also does everything else with it. So it's kind of like, look, until she retires, we're pretty much staying this way. Which, that's kind of a Church of Christ thing, isn't it? Just keep going. Not broken, keep going forward, right? But that's one of the reasons why I loved this topic and what we get to discuss, is because this entire week is about what? What's the theme? Better. Better than. It's better. There's better ways. Not automatically that those things were wrong, right? There's nothing wrong with paying by checks. It's an inconvenience for me at times because it takes 2 days to clear through the systems, right? And then they'll go, well, that's not technically the check's fault, that's the bank. I'm like, you want me to change banking laws? That's not going to happen ever, right? But this thing called hope. I'm married. It'll be 11 years in May. My wife is my sanity. She's my joy. She's everything. I wish she could be here. She is the way cooler part of me by far. In fact, if you guys look me up on social media, and you're welcome to do that, you will look at her and go, how did that work out? Because she's way too pretty for him. Like that's, I get that all the time. And I tell people one day I'm going to write a book, and it's going to say how I got my wife on the front, and on the back it's like it's going to have two words in the entire book, and it's going to say pure luck. That's all it's going to say in the inside. And I've got two kids who are just joy overflowing in every sense of the word. Charlotte, she's just turned 9. Charlotte is just energy and passion and love, and she likes to spin in circles, and it's like a cat, you know, and it's weird, but I love it. Like, I see her, I walk in the house, and it just as a parent, it just brings up this moment of joy where I'm like, I don't know why she's doing that. That's weird. That's got to be your mother. But I love that. It's awesome. And she likes to code. Like, so she does, like, gaming and online coding. She's 9. And so I own a media company, but when I get together with her and stuff, she's in there, and I'm like, I don't know what you're doing. Like, what's happening right there? She's like, I'm drawing this cat. Watch, I'm going to make it move its paw. And it starts doing this, and I'm like, that's how communism started. You know, like, there's a lot of things that I just have a lot of fun with her. And my son, Duncan, just turned, actually, that's a little bit dated, but he's 22 months old now, 21 months old, right around there. He started to a point now where he wears the same pants. Like, he wants to wear the same pants every day. That's so weird. But I love it. Like, she's like, my wife is constantly washing the same little pair of pants, and they'll run up to you and like hold them and go, ah! And I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do with that? And he's like, and then so you put them on, and he runs off like as happy as a little lark. All of these things, and I'll tell you, in my marriage, I have awesome things that are happening. I love my wife, but anybody who's been married or is married knows that it's not always that way, right? And so I'm constantly hoping every day for a better marriage. I'm not done. I'm not done in those things. In relationships, we're never okay with where we are we? In school, right? Some of you guys are looking at me like, technically, yes, I'm fine with where I'm at in school. I could be done right now, quit, and be fine. But you know that's not reality. That you always want to know more, learn more, do more. In fact, oftentimes, hope, we have made it into something that we, because in faith we can be assured in Christ, but we miss out on the fact that hope is not meant to make us comfortable. In fact, this type of hope is meant to make us and help us realize that we're still missing something. It's, there's something, I'm not there yet. We have hope in the salvation in Christ. That's faith. That's belief. But we haven't arrived there yet. We still live in this world, don't we? And I don't know about you, but in this world right now, as I look around and I see the things that are happening, aren't you guys looking at times and going, oh, there has to be something more than this? How about the fires that are raging in California right now? And apparently you guys have to deal with that quite a bit around here at times, don't you? Ironically, in Texas, we don't have those wildfires nearly as much as we have these things called tornadoes. And they're never small ones. Like in our area, it's always like an F5. How big is an F5? It's a mile and a half wide. That's not a tornado. That's a hurricane. I mean, it's what it looks like and what it feels like when it comes through. And we go up to the church building whenever there's a big storm that comes through like that, that has a possibility. Because if you're in a house and a tornado comes through, it's not a joke. The house won't be there. There will be nothing left but the slab foundation. That's the premise of it. So we go to the church building and we have this nursery, and we're very blessed in this. Our congregation has about 700 members, give or take, but it's an older facility. And so we have this nursery that's all boxed in, and we can be safe in there, and there's no windows, and all the kids can go in there. My daughter and them can run crazy. Even if that thing takes a direct hit, there's three floors. So even with that, inside the cylinder brick building that was built in 1952, we're going to be okay. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's like a citywide safety shelter. So like if people wanted to run in, like that's where the city sends them. You'll be fine at the Church of Christ. That's where you go. Oh, I live about a mile and a half. Wichita Falls, Texas is where I currently live. So if you know anything about that, that's right where the Gulf of Mexico comes up and comes down the side, and it hits and it begins all the storms that go across Oklahoma, Arkansas. Wichita Falls were always the starting point of those things. So the storms pick up and then they slowly start moving that way. And thankfully, most of the time it's right on the other side of us. But every once in a while it starts on the front side and we run for cover. And we have these things. And you guys, if you just think recently in just the news and hurricane, you got Harvey and then Irma. And then you've got the fires that are happening, terrible shootings in Las Vegas and all these different places. And I'd like to tell you that's not the norm for the world. But since Genesis 3, since the fall of man, we haven't really learned this whole be kind to one another. And we haven't really learned the fact that our world is broken. And that even in Romans 8, in fact, Scripture speaks of even the creation itself groans to be made whole. That even the creation, the earth itself, groans to just be redeemed. It's broken. We feel that, don't we? But we have substituted faith in our spiritual life at times in this assurance that we have in something coming, that the Lord will return. And we've changed it out and made it about something completely different. We've made it about comfort. In fact, that's not what it is. I want you to keep reading with me. Starting in verse 2, by faith we understand that the universe was created by the Word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. I need you guys to catch this, because this is such an important starting part when it comes to faith. Faith and this inability to accept that everything is done, we're not done yet, is built into faith itself. If we think faith is about knowing everything, or I know enough at this point in time, now you come to a point in time where you know enough that you need salvation. That doesn't mean that you know enough to stop learning. The problem is that, and can we have a family moment, an honest moment here? That a lot of times we look at baptism as an end point instead of the beginning. That we place it there as, that's our goal. Going to get them baptized. All right, good luck. And then let's hope they show up to church on Sunday. And that becomes the mentality. But it's the beginning of a journey, not the end. The beginning. And we often miss that about faith. Faith is the beginning part. Faith is what is meant to spur in us a need for more. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because that's ultimately what this is all about. Souls. Instead of just this idea of numbers. In fact, I have a saying that I've said a few times, and I'm sure I've taken this from somebody else at some point in time. But it's this, is numbers mean nothing except for they mean two things. They mean stories and they mean souls. If they mean anything else to you, then you're not doing it right. If it's at the end of the year, we baptized so-and-so number of people, but you can't name them or tell their stories, you have a problem. That's part of the issues we run across. Now, that's not a problem with our theology. It's a problem with our practice. The Bible is not wrong. It's never been wrong. There's nothing wrong with where we're getting it from. It's how we're putting it into action. It's how we're putting it out there. So keep reading with me, because I want you guys to see very quickly there. By faith, we understand that the universe was created by the Word of God. So here's one of those moments that when this hit me, totally blew my mind. Just going to say this real quick. Do you guys realize that the world, the universe is still expanding? Like, even science and the rest says that. Which means that the Word of God was so powerful in Genesis 1 when it began that it's still going today. Some of you are like, ooh, okay. So when he said, let there be light, it's still going to this day. Let there be, and then done. And it's still expanding. The power of that, the faith that we can have in that. And I'm just going to be honest with you. There's a book that was titled a while back that I love. It's called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. And I'll be honest with you. There's times where I hear that and I see that, where when I see the wonders and the marvels of God, it takes more faith to not believe than it does to believe. In fact, you have to search for it. You have to search to look for. Now, in no way do I want to take away from the journey that a lot of people are on in seeking to find God. I have a lot of agnostic friends, a lot of atheistic friends who I love dearly, who are on a journey of searching for truth. And anytime somebody's searching for truth, I welcome that and I applaud that. Just because they haven't gotten there yet doesn't mean that automatically I'm against them. I'm not against atheists or agnostics. I'm for their search for the truth, as long as they're being honest with all the options available. All the things that are available. I want you to look at the next verse, because we're just going to walk here until we run out of time, basically, through some of these scriptures, because these are some of my favorites. By faith, Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts. And through his faith, though he died, he still speaks. I love this concept. Through his, even though he died, his life lived out. His faith lived out. Now we know the story of Cain and Abel, right? What happens? Brother gets jealous because God took more pleasure in Abel's offering than Cain's. And so he kills him, right? Now, have you ever looked at that story at times and been like, well, maybe it was about the offering, about the sacrifice. Well, it was technically, but you're like, well, Abel offers what? Okay, what does Cain offer? Okay, so thanks for the field. What does Abel offer? The firstborn, right? Of what? Of his flocks. So I love the parallel there, because we see a whole lot of things about sheep going forward, don't we? Anybody here ever realize how many sheep are mentioned in the Bible? It's just a lot. Now, and this is part of the problem with context at times, is that we are not in a shepherding society. Anybody here grow up around sheep? Like, I rarely get somebody, unless, I'll be honest, unless it's an older person, because in general, we just didn't grow up around sheep. By the way, for 4-H, there we go. So that's about the only other time I hear that. So you chased them. So that's about the only time I ever hear that, because a lot of times we don't even realize the correlation that we so often see. And in fact, Jesus even says, I am the good shepherd. Did you guys know that sheep are unbelievably stupid? You might know this. That if you do not move them to another field, they will literally eat until everything is gone, and then they will eat even their own excrement that's left after. Like, that's a stupid animal. Like, really dumb. But apparently, in this offering, Abel offers this firstborn, and what we learn very quickly is that God is about the heart. That what Cain offered was not in the same, not, it wasn't that they, well, he also didn't offer a sheep. It was that his offering wasn't what Cain's was, wasn't what Abel's was. And he kills him. They says, and from his very, even though he is dead, he still speaks. That faith still speaks forward. Now, from what we can tell, it was either that his heart told him to hold back, because we can always go back to the heart of the matter with people. It's either that he held back his best for himself, which is, again, a heart issue, or his offering itself was not done by the heart. And it always comes down to the intentions of the offering and the way that he did it. I want to tell you the story about two friends of mine. I spent 3 years working in Asia, in China, Vietnam, Cambodia, and Thailand, working with underground churches. I taught English at some of the universities there. Loved my work there. met a lot and worked a lot with underground churches. And when you hear underground, some of you guys might think, like, was it underground? It wasn't. It was in apartments. It's underground in nature. Okay. It was the same thing I did as a kid whenever I heard about the Underground Railroad. Anybody actually think there was an Underground Railroad? I grew up in Italy, so when I heard that, I was like, cool, America's got underground railroads. Like, that's literally what I thought. And I was like, that's not a thing. Instead, it was a way to get from one place to the other, but it was secretive is really what it was. And so for 3 years, I worked with secret house churches where many of the members at times were always up against the possibility of being arrested, the possibility of being considered anti-government along the way. But we ran into... there was a cult that came up out of nowhere in China that's actually on a list of designated terror watch lists now. It was a cult called the Eastern Lightning Cult, and it's based off of Matthew, I believe, 16, where it says, "And they will rise up like the lightning from the east." This lady believes she is the reincarnation of Jesus. I believe her name is Mrs. Hu. And I'll be honest, the translation in English is kind of funny when you think about it. It's like, Mrs. Hu? Because she thinks she's Jesus. And she, what they do is they infiltrate underground churches by showing up, acting like they want to learn about God, seeking out foreigners that they specifically know as missionaries in some way, do what they can to infiltrate, and then they try to catch the leaders in compromising situations. They try to either get them drunk or there's some prostitutes to their house, all of these different things. And then once they're in there, because Asian culture and Chinese culture is so much about saving face, that they will then own that church basically by holding those things over them and have them teach what they would want them to teach, that Mrs. Hu is the Jesus and reincarnation and so forth. It became a pretty prevalent thing for a while. The Chinese government, ironically, was kind of for us in this one because they came in and said, no, no. So they started arresting some of these apostate little mini churches that were popping up. But what would happen if you did not submit and did not live out your life, or it would not do what they wanted you to do, is that they would kill you. I had two dear brothers who were some of the first ones that I spent time with in China, that were some of the first to become Christians, who I warned them over and over again about these two guys that showed up out of nowhere who seemed very interested. Suddenly I said, I just get this weird feeling about them. And we'd heard these rumors about this underground cult that was coming around. I begged them. I said, I don't trust them. Don't trust them. Don't trust them. A few weeks later, I got called to go identify their bodies. And I'll be honest with you, there's these moments of faith where you start questioning just about everything as you realize that these two dear brothers had, obviously they tried to put them in compromising situations, but by that point, I do not believe that they renounced their faith. In fact, I can tell by their death that their faith was made whole. That's what I can tell you by that. I wish I could tell you that that was just a one-off type of situation. I've lost far too many brothers in Christ through underground cults, through governments worldwide in the years. But when it says, though he died, he still speaks, we're talking about faith. I don't want you to think that that's something removed from even our culture today or removed from the world in which you live in. You live in a world that costs you and it may cost you your life. We don't like to talk about that a lot. In fact, I found that teens actually enjoy talking about it more than adults do, because it makes adults feel very uncomfortable, because we are a people who constantly, if we're very honest with ourselves in America, that's what we seek is comfort. And rightfully so, at times it's for our families. These are the excuses we make, isn't it? We want to take care of our families, we want to do those things, and we mean those all in the right way, but oftentimes it ends up becoming something very different than even what we originally meant. One of my favorites, by faith, Enoch, or Enoch, however you want to say his name, was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God had taken him. Now, before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. I love this because it just mentioned this guy from the Old Testament. How many of you have ever heard of Enoch or Enoch? Okay, Enoch, just love him. He's in, I believe it's in Genesis, is where he's found. But one of my favorite things is, like, he walked with God like 365 years, or at, you know, he met God at 65 and walked with him for 300 years. And then apparently it's like they went out for a walk one day And then God, I got to a point where they were like, and God's like, hey, my house is closer than your house. You just want to come home with me? Like, that's like what happened. It's like they just went and he was gone. And I'll be honest with you, this feeling of discontent, which is really the word I want you to remember throughout all of this, that faith is not meant to give us this concept of comfort in this world. It's supposed to bring about this feeling of discontent. I'm not done here yet. I know what I have hope and assurance for in the future, but I am discontent with where I am. I'm not okay here. And so this Enoch going forward and then walking with God and God bringing him home, man, I want that. I want those things. And I want to be so discontent with this world, but content in God, that I want to walk with him to a point where he goes, look, my house is closer. Let's just go home. And there's been a few times in life where I've wanted this. I was in Cambodia. And I was in a, we rented a van, and they told us that this van's going to go, and this was in the early 2000s, so this was right after a civil war had happened. The UN had just come in. There was still some guerrilla factions going on at different times. And we were going to try to find some of the small underground churches in Cambodia, going from city to city and place to place. And it was also kind of like a little mini vacation from China, because China was really, really cold, and they turned off our power. And they said, we must save China power. I went, you can save China power. I don't care. And they were like, oh, no, but it is okay. This was like January 6th. It was snowing outside. It was 12 degrees. And they turned off the power to the building, so no heating, nothing. And I said, well, when will it come back on? He goes, oh, probably start of semester. I went, that's February 26th. That's a month and a half from now. So we headed south. We were like, we got on a plane. I had like $300. And I went, where are we going? He goes, south. That was a good friend of mine. We went to Vietnam, spent 2.5 weeks going down to Vietnam, Cambodia, and just started working for churches there because it was, this is so stupid, it was hot. It wasn't freezing. That was our entire missional mindset for that time. We're not going to freeze. Anybody else do that around here? Winter comes and you guys are like, we're going to Texas. Going south. Don't go anywhere, but you kind of wish you did, right? So we headed these different ways, and I got in this this van, and I don't know why, but we were all cramped in. This van was supposed to sit maybe 10 people. There was probably 20 in there. And now I'm sitting there with my huge backpack I've got. I've been traveling for 3 months, and I've got a person laying down on the floor underneath my feet. My feet are up against my chest, and I'm holding onto my bag. My good friend's sitting next to me, and for 13 hours along a dirt road, we're sitting going, there's no air conditioning. Everybody's sweating. It smells horrendous in this thing. Three different people throw up at different times in the van driving. And I'll be honest with you, I couldn't figure out why the driver kept crossing himself and praying. And I was going, what? And I was looking at Kyle's, my friend. I was like, Kyle, what is he Catholic? Like, what is this road? And we're going on this dirt road, and all of a sudden I just see these huge potholes all along the roads everywhere. And these are all dirt roads anyway, so I'm just assuming these are from trucks coming through or whatever. And Kyle's like, I don't know. I don't speak Khmer. I have no idea. So this little girl from the back, who apparently watches American television every once in a while, goes, oh, it is from the landmines. And I looked, I'm sorry, what? Did she just say landmines? And she was like, yes, you know, boom. Kyle, where are we going? And he was like, I don't know. And we're driving through this place like hoping we don't hit a landmine. And I'm looking at the guy, and literally he's driving around the potholes, and every time he drives around certain parts, he's like, I'm like, oh, okay. Has he made it this far before? Like, has anybody been down this road where we're going at some point in time? And no kidding, as we're driving along, all of a sudden I see fire in the distance, and I'm like, uh-oh. Remember, guerrilla factions, there's skirmishes going on. We're not the brightest people for having been in this country at this point in time. And then I realized they're burning the field, and as they're burning the field, they're burning it to set off landmines. And so as we're driving along, we all the distance, and we're like, do we cheer or are we sad? Like, are we sad that they're there, or do we cheer like, yay, they got one? You know, such a weird moment. I remember thinking at some point in time going, God, Enoch type moment right now would be good. I'm here serving. Your servant is here serving you, walking alongside you in faith. If you want to swing back by here, you know, just pick me up on my way out. That would be awesome. But then I got to a point where I thought about it and I was like, well, what about Kyle? And I remember going, well, you know, Peter made that mistake once too, didn't he? He was like, what about John? And he was like, who is he to you? And I'm like, no, no, forget him. I'm on my own. Jesus, come back. I'm going with you right now. Let's make this happen. And I remember thinking, and this is the really cool part about it, is that through faith, death is like lost everything. Like, did you, I mean, all of that. I remember thinking, even that moment, and I've had a lot of really, and this is where I will put this out there for parents who have teens and teens that are in this classroom. I'm a big, big fan of the fact that we live way too much in fear. I don't have a death wish. I don't. I have children, and I've been given the responsibility. They are on loan from God. It is a responsibility of mine as their father to raise them up. But I'm going to tell you this real quick. God will always be a better father to my children than I ever will be. I don't have a death wish, but I'm not going to live in fear in this world. It's why my wife allows me, which is where I think her courage comes through, allows me to go to the places that I go to and do the things that I do, because she understands that to live in fear is to live without faith. Enoch walked with him. And it is in his discontent with being alone, he walked in contentment with God. And God was like, home's right over here. Let's just go in. And he went, that sounds amazing. Let's do that. But instead, you and I oftentimes are left here to live out and oftentimes been asked to do things that just is absurd. Watch this. I'll look at this next little part. Oh, I love this part because this is the most ridiculous thing that we've ever seen. By faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear, constructed an ark for the saving of his household. I love this because we totally miss this. I call it VBSing things. How many of you have ever been to a VBS? We talked about Noah's Ark. Right. Okay. I want you to catch this. The worst historical death of mankind. And we're like, let's teach this story to children. I just want you to think about what happens in the story of Noah. A dude that's really old starts building a boat 1,000 times bigger than what his family needs. 500 miles from the closest ocean, and starts getting animals to come closer. No, come on in here. You're going to want to go ahead and go in. All right, sweet. All humanity dies, and we make puppets out of this. Am I wrong in this? It's like, is everybody else going to die? Yeah, probably. Sweet. Let's do a whole entire week about it. Why? Because the animals are cute. Yeah, you never show the part, and I'm just going to be honest, because this is, I know I see scripture weird, but I don't know why everybody sees it the other way, but to me, I look at this and it says, by faith, Noah had a fear constructed. What's the fear that he has? Not fear in the things that were going to happen in that world, but fear for what? For God. The only thing he feared was the wrath of God. God said, build a boat. I'm 500 miles from anything. Sweet, we're building the boat. He said, get all the animals. Even the big ones? Yeah, the big ones too. Can I get baby ones of those? Yes. All right. Awesome. Yeah, we automatically assume they're all full grown, don't we? They're not. And by the way, the word is not two of every species. It's two of every kind. Which, by the way, explains why 99% of all the species in the world are extinct. I don't know what our fascination is with dinosaurs, because all the other ones are dead too. 99%. And by the way, did y'all know this is a true story? 90% of all dinosaurs were smaller than cows. Like, we don't think about it. We always think of the big ones, right? And that's it. Those are the only ones. I'm like, no, there was others. They all died. I know some of you are looking at me going, where is this coming from? It's education, and you should continue to get it. I know, it's the downside of things. But ironically, if you go to Wikipedia and you look how many percentage of species are extinct, it'll say 99.9% are extinct. That's Satan's doing, I believe, personally. That, and they breed on water, which, if you know anything about the flood. And here's the part of the flood that we often forget. Do you realize when the flood landed, and I don't mean to be gross or too graphic in this, but do you think that there might have been claw marks on the side of the ark? With people crying out. And do you think that Noah may have found himself inside praying, but also closing his ears to the screams of what he's hearing happening outside?
Don't you think that he was fearful for that?
Absolutely.
I mean,
In fact, he called for repentance for quite a while.
Sure, but I think he feared a lot of things. He feared what was going to happen to his children afterwards.
Sure.
He feared what was total fear.
Absolutely.
But his healthy fear was the fear of God.
Absolutely.
He could control it. He could turn it on. He could turn it off.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing that I love is, and if there was ever a lesson about marrying the right people, isn't it be the wife of Ham and Japheth? Just throwing that out there. Talk about marrying into the right family. That's the one right there. It's where you go. Marry a Christian. Marry a guy who's going to survive the apocalypse. That's going to survive the end of the world. Which is what Noah's sons did, right? They did that. But I want you to catch this last part as we kind of close up. By this, he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. Sometimes God's going to ask you to build a boat 500 miles away from a river and away from an ocean. And he's going to say, by the way, gather up some animals and put them inside. It's going to rain. And he goes, what's rain? It's going to flood. What's a flood? There's going to be moments in time where you're asked, especially in light of the culture we live in. And let me bring this into a teen world, and then we'll bring this back into an adult world. In a teen world, you might get to a point where you feel like somebody's asking you to do something that goes against everything you know that will make you feel normal in this world. Just do this. Be like this. In fact, if you guys think about every day, y'all know y'all are hit by 4,000 to 5,000 subliminal messages every day, driving down the road, television, whatever. It's drive this, look like this, just be this. If you were just a little bit more like this, then everything would be okay. And then the irony is the next commercial goes, yes, but you also need this. And then you will need this too, and then you will need this. And then the next one comes on and goes, that product's not nearly as good as this one we have here. You're constantly sold about things that you're supposed to be. If you don't think our world is screaming out in discontent, we're not okay. We're broken. And if there was ever a people who could go, yeah, we absolutely are. We're a broken people. We're evil to each other. And yeah, there's even some things that seem evil, but they're not. They're amoral. Storms are amoral. Tornadoes are amoral. They're not purposefully evil. God did not send them to destroy everything instantly in the way that He did before we see with the flood. In fact, He said that's the process of a broken world. That's not how it's going to work. But if you have the answer, if you have faith, and you know what's going to happen, then that discontentment that you feel gets turned from there's something broken to there's one who knows how to make me whole. And through the waters and redemption of baptism, He makes me whole, but that's not the end. Then you take that discontentment and you turn it towards a race and a pursuit of God. I'm going for God. I'm discontent because I'm not there with Him yet. And when I achieve that, that's peace. That's where comfort lies. Not anything in this world. And adults, and here's where I want to bring it to you guys. We have this problem that we may be the first generation, I'm going to be honest, in history, who actually believes that we can achieve happiness in our generation. We're not thinking about the next. We think we can do it now. Absolutely. But not only that, we're never going to find it in this world. Yet many of us, and if we're honest, in America, in the United States, today, faith has become, we go to church and we're here. In fact, I'm happy. I'm content with where I'm at in life. I got kids. They're good kids. They're not bad kids. And I don't know when the definition of not bad kids is, well, they don't do the bad stuff. That doesn't make them a good kid. Just because they don't do bad things. What, do you want a cookie for that? You're not supposed to do those things. That's why I tell teens all the time, they're like, well, I'm not on drugs. Good job. Well, I'm not sleeping around. Well, okay. Why are you telling me this? Do good. It's one of the reasons why I'll be honest, as a child, I used to go to God and I'd say, God, I don't understand everything. I wish You was just clear. I wish I just understood what You wanted from me. And then I remember saying that to my dad one time, and my dad turned and goes, I need you to go read Isaiah 1:16-17. And real quick, we're going to close with that. If you guys want to look at Isaiah, this is one of my favorite little, let me make this as clear as possible to you type verses. Isaiah 1:16-17 says this. Wash yourselves, make yourselves clean. Now bring that in the New Testament. What do we have? Baptism. Remove the evil of your deeds before my eyes. Die to yourselves. Cease to do evil. Now here's my favorite. Learn to do good. Apparently we're very good at evil. We're going to have to learn how to do good things. Seek justice. Correct oppression. Bring justice to the fatherless. Plead the widow's cause. How many times do you see that played out in the teachings of Jesus? How many times do you see that played out in the New Testament? You love one another. You take care of one another. You wash yourselves before you come into my presence. You clean yourselves off. I am the only one and only way to the Father. So I want to thank you guys for being here. I do this at every class that I teach. And I'll just tell you all this. We have this word that we use often in the United States and in the English language that we say one thing when we mean another. And it's the word love. We'll say things like, I love my wife. I also love tacos. And I hope y'all understand there's a difference between the two of those. The Greek allows for such. There's four different words for love. I believe the Hebrew has three. We have one. But let me tell you this. I love you guys. I want to see you and spend an eternity with you in heaven. And I hope you'll take that sense of we're not there yet and place that within your faith, because it is the things which we hope for. Hope for God. Pursue God. Run after God. That's what you're running after. Not just comfort in this world. Be discontent with where you are now, because you're not home yet. And when you get home is when you can rest in His peace and His grace and His mercy. I love you guys. Thank you all so much for being here this morning. I really do appreciate it.